Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you in real time from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanti Nilayam, Puttaparthi, Andhra Pradesh. The time in the ashram right now is exactly 40 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Today is Thursday, October the 13th, 2016, and it's a bright and sunny day here in the ashram, with an expected high of 31 degrees Celsius later in the afternoon and overnight low of 22. Current temperature is at 24 degrees Celsius. Serving the ashram and all its allied institutions currently are the dedicated Sevadal volunteers from the state of Bihar. Prashanti Nilayam has just concluded the celebrations for Navratri Festival 2016 as per the grammar of the Vedas, in exactly the manner that Bhagwan prescribed. The sacred and spiritual extravaganza culminated in Prashanti Nilayam on Tuesday, last Tuesday, 2 days ago, on 11th of October, with the completion of, among other things, the Sri Satya Sai Gram Seva. The Sri Satya Sai Gram Seva is a unique one-of-its-kind village outreach program conducted by the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. As part of this Gram Seva in this year, 2016, more than 2,000 students and 300 faculty members from the four campuses of the Sai University and the higher secondary schools here associated with the Prashanti Nilayam Trust participated in this program. This Gram Seva is now in its 16th consecutive year. Can you imagine 16 years of continuous Gram Seva? And it has covered this year 150 villages in the three mandals of Anantapur district. And these are Puttaparthi, Kottacheruvu, and Bukkapatnam. A total of 50,000 households were given clothes and more than 300,000 villagers, that is 3 lakh persons, were served with fresh food and Laddu Prasadam over the period of 9 days. Two other very important events that were conducted in Prashanti Nilayam simultaneously with the Gram Seva were, first of all, the Veda Purush Sapta Gyana Yagna, and secondly, the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha. The Veda Purush Sapta Gyana Yagna is a 7-day sacrificial worship or a yagna conducted in Prashanti Nilayam since more than 5 decades now. The Gyana Yagna was initiated by Sri Satya Sai Baba with the aim of promoting world peace, harmony, love and spiritual uplift for humanity. This yagna is conducted by Vedic scholars from Andhra Pradesh with strict adherence to scriptural injunctions, and it concluded on Vijayadashmi Day, as I told you, on Tuesday, 2 days ago. Now, the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha was held during the evenings in the Sai Kulwant Hall, after the students and staff returned from Gram Seva. During these evening sessions, the faculty members of the Sai University and other scholars who are well versed in Indian scriptures expounded on spiritual topics and the life and message of Bhagwan Baba. These talks were followed by short audio discourses of Bhagwan Baba on the theme of Dasera, with important spiritual instructions for devotee and generally a music program. So all three events, the Veda Purusha Sapta Gyana Yagna, the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha and the Grama Seva, essentially represent in spirit the triad of spiritual paths of Bhakti, Jnana and Karma Yoga. The Jnana, the Yagna pertains to the act of worship. The Vidwan Mahasabha is aimed at enlightening our intellect to pursue truth. And Gram Seva provides an opportunity to dedicate our physical energies towards acts of selfless service. As a result of all this, you can actually feel the heightened divine energy in the ashram, and honestly, our Prashanti Nilayam today is reverberating with the energy of the highest heavens. We hope you were able to join this grand celebration, at least virtually, by staying tuned to Radio Sai. Because on RadioSai.org, on our home page, every day we were webcasting live all these major events. Dear listeners, it's rather interesting that in India, Navratri festival marks community and family worship of the feminine aspect of divinity across the 9 days. With Navratri, we don't need to announce that a goddess has arrived because she's everywhere in her divine splendor. Now, while we place the goddess on a high pedestal during the 9 days of Navratri, the question becomes, where does she go for the rest of the year? Do we relegate her to the back of our minds? Or even abuse her as she walks, talks and interacts with us in many forms all the time? Does the goddess not live within each of us? And by each one, I mean every man and woman. India is a land that worships God as the feminine energy, and yet is also the land, very sadly, which can be an unsafe place for the girl child and women. Female infanticide remains a concern, and the girl child is still malnourished and deprived of her right to equal opportunity when it comes to education, health care and decision making in her family. Dowry deaths, wage disparity and the violation of women's rights are disturbing trends not only in India but around the world. Our beloved Bhagwan was the best exemplar of the three Devis, as he represents the perfect balance of of Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati, the quiet, the active and the witness. Today on Morning Glory, we celebrate the glory of womanhood through the story of a modern Indian woman who, through her value system, her faith, her education and her drive, defies the stereotype and gives us hope for the shift in our mindset about the place of women in our society. Dear brothers and sisters, this morning I'm delighted to bring you a recently recorded Tris with a Divinity interview with Mrs. Deepti Gaur Mukherjee. Deepti Gaur Mukherjee is an IAS, that is an Indian Administrative Service Officer from Central India. And this is our feature presentation on Morning Glory today. And that interview will be coming up in a bit in the second half of the show. But first, we are going to celebrate the outstanding success of a Sai University alumnus, Mr. Rajashekhar Badam, or should I say Badam, who has just received his doctorate from JAIST, or the Japan Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. Recently, that is on September the 23rd, 2016, at the JAIST graduation ceremony at Nomi City, Ishikawa, Japan, Sai University alumnus Mr. Rajashekhar Badam was selected as the outstanding graduate out of the 9 graduates who received their PhD in material sciences in this term. Mr. Rajashekhar completed his BSc Chemistry Honours in 2009 from Bhagwan's College in Brindavan, and he completed his Masters in Science and Chemistry in 2011 from the Prashanti Nilayam campus of the Sai University. During his Masters program, his Divine Chancellor Bhagwan Baba personally guided Rajashekhar to pursue further studies, that is his PhD abroad. After finishing his MSc, he worked right here in Puttaparthi and Prashanthi Nilayam campus of the Sai University as a research assistant in the Department of Physics. It's interesting, he studied chemistry, but then he did his research in physics because Swami guided him, and he did this till 2012. And then in 2013, he joined JAIST in Japan as a project researcher of NEDO. NEDO is the New Energy and Industrial Technology Development Organization of Japan. And Rajshekhar worked on creation of electrode materials for fuel cell technology. He not only succeeded in facile preparation of electrode materials, but further designed a novel class of electrode which shows much higher performance in comparison with commercial materials in the US. The performance of the materials is exceeding the target value which is meant to be achieved by 2020. So he's 4 years ahead. And this is the value that has been set by the Department of Energy of the United States of America. Obviously, the results of his research were widely reported and actively presented all over the world, including at various professional forums in Dallas and Honolulu and elsewhere. At present, Brother Rajshekhar Badam is working as postdoctoral fellow at Toyota Technological Institute at Nagoya in Japan. Thanks to technology, I recently caught up with him over the phone to learn more about his achievements and the role that his alma mater, the Sai University, and its divine founder, Chancellor Bhagwan Baba, have played in his success. Have a listen to this conversation, dear listeners, with a very humble and sorted-out overachiever, one of many such outstanding products of the Sai education system. But before I play that interview, it's time for me to announce the question for this morning, and you can email me your answer right after I announce it to you, so please be ready. Here comes the question for Morning Glory today. When did Bhagwan Baba start the Grama Seva tradition for Sai students during the Navratri? Give me the year when Grama Seva began here in Prashanthi. So please email me your answers with your full name and location by email, and you know where to reach me. My email ID is karuna@radiosai.org, and I'm going to spell it for you. K as in kite, A, R for Robert, U, N for Nancy, A, K-A-R-U-N-A at radiosai. It's a single word. No gaps, no caps. radiosai.org. And now, here is my telephonic interview with Dr. Rajshekhar Badam of Japan. Have a listen, please, and keep in mind, he's a product of our very own Satya Sai University. Sai Ram, and congratulations, Brother Rajshekhar, on your recent achievement.
Thank you very much, sister.
It's wonderful you have been awarded not only the PhD degree, but also you were selected as the only person in that entire batch to receive the Outstanding Graduate Award from the president of JAIST. So double congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Now, what can you tell us briefly in layperson language about the nature of your research? It's highly specialized in material sciences. So for the rest of us, what can we understand about it?
As you all know, the world is facing problems like global warming and depletion of fossil fuels.
For sure.
So the scientific world is looking for alternative energy sources with least or no pollution. Keeping this in background, I was working on the preparation of novel materials for next generation energy devices. Mm-hmm. Fuel cell is one such device, which converts hydrogen into electricity and water as byproduct.
I see.
Though the device is very efficient, its main material of construction is very costly. Hence, my main motive and idea was to design and develop material which can be easily prepared and can be readily commercialized.
Mm-hmm.
I succeeded in the preparation of this material, and further I could design a novel class of electrode which shows much higher performance in comparison with commercially best materials. And the performance of the material is exceeding the target value of international agencies in this field.
Oh, very impressive.
We hope with Swami's grace, this material will be useful to our society.
Are we allowed to know what this material is, or is it a patent secret or something?
Nothing like that. It's already published in journals, and further research is going on in industry level. It's mainly carbon black based material. We have done some simple functionalizations. Usually, commercially, they use a two-step of process, but we made it into single and simple procedure.
Now, that's a very impressive achievement. In your opinion, Brother Rajshekhar, how do you think that your background as a Sai student contributed to your success? You only joined in 2013, and in 2016, you already done your PhD and everything, and you are really made a name for yourself in this area of research. I noticed how many professional conferences you have been invited to. So, what part did your background from the Sai University play in all this?
It's all from the background of being Sai student and what I've learned there. I'd like to give a small prelude before I answer this question.
Sure.
On the last day of my tenure in Parthi in the year 2012, during Darshan, I was stuck with a question.
Mm-hmm.
That is, what have I learned in these 6.5 years of stay near Swami? Though I did not get any clear answer for this question that time, but Swami had different plans. Swami practically showed me the difference between me and my counterparts when I have come to Japan. So now coming to the direct answer for this question. According to me, the most important things that are required for any quality research student or any student for that matter are practical skills along with knowledge, time management, focused mind and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll briefly tell about all these points and how I have acquired these in being Sai student. Coming to practical skills along with knowledge. As we all know, Swami used to give a lot of importance to practical knowledge and not mere bookish knowledge. And he has told in many discourses also. And the practical or the research aptitude we get along with strong academic background in our curriculum at Sri Sat Science to Higher Learning gives us edge over others. This is possible only with the dedicated teachers we have there.
Mm.
And they are the main pillars for teaching me ABC of research. And coming to the second important point, it is time management.
Mm-hmm.
Being a student at Sri Sat Science to Higher Learning, a lot of extracurricular activities are integral part of our curriculum. Participating in them not only gives us skills in dramatics, arts, sports, and experience in service activities, etc., but there is another important underlying aspect, what I think is, that is time management. And this we apparently miss to notice when we are studying there.
Hmm.
In my tenure there, as a part of my self-reliance program, I was working in stores in Vrindavan and a maintenance group in Parthi. We as a maintenance group used to work a lot, and it used to be very time-consuming process as we had work all around the year. This gave me an amazing opportunity to me for learning time management. With this in hand, I could manage my research activities or spending time, quality time with my family, as well as the regular spiritual activities and programs in Sai centers across Japan when I've come to Japan. And the next important point is focused mind. How many of our activities we are involved in Parthi, the schedule and the environment there made sure that we are always focused. If we are making structures for sports meet or doing seva activities during Grama Seva, which is going on now.
Right now, yes.
We are focused only on work. During classes, we are focused on lectures, and in Mandir, we are always focused on Swami. Like this, time to time, our focus was aligning to a particular moment. This quality was instilled in all the students unintentionally. I feel the spiritual activities we do, like bhajans or Vedam chanting or study circles, or physical activities like regular sports and games, will improve the focus of our mind. Even when I joined JAIST, the Sai activities took care of this important aspect of life. And last but not the least, the discipline. The discipline and the punctuality in hostel, institute and mandir schedules instilled a lot of discipline and punctuality in us. As many of us know that Japan is one of the most punctual countries in the world today.
True.
And they are very disciplined and hardworking. After I came to JAIST, I could easily gel with the system and also with the hardworking nature. And all the credit goes to Hostel Institute and Mandir Punctuality and the schedule and the discipline. Apart from this, I feel that the immediate environment in Bharti boosts the spirit in us. Similarly, with Swami's grace, I had very good people around me, like the guidance, the support and the encouragement given by my family and Assistant Professor Raman Vedarajan, who is alumni brother of our institute and is currently working as Assistant Professor in JAIST. And luckily, Noriyoshi Maksume, who is a supervisor and he is a staunch devotee of Swami, acted as catalyst to this success.
Very nice to know you have your own Sai ecosystem there at JAIST. Very nice. Now, you're speaking of divine guidance, you know, your journey after what you studied here till you reached where you are today. Did you experience Swami's guiding hand through this process?
Yes, of course. I feel that those who leave everything in God's hand will eventually see God's hand in everything. So I never used to worry about anything. And it's told in Ramavatar when a stone was touched by Rama's feet, transformed into Arya. And I feel it's not the greatness of the devotee who is transformed, but the power of divine grace that touched. As Swami, we know, is as benevolent as he is always. He keeps on pouring his divine grace on every one of us, even when we don't ask for it. As the above saying goes, even I was touched with the same divinity and transformed from an average student to this.
That's very nice to hear. And now, what's next on the go for you?
Okay. Currently, I'm working for Toyota Technological Institute as a postdoc. And I don't think much about my future, and I am sure that Swami will guide us all through the way. But what I think is to do research abroad for a few more years to get proper exposure of research and technology and come back to India and use the knowledge for us.
Sounds like a nice plan of action. What advice, Brother Rajshekhar, would you give to Sai youth who have academic and career choices to make and are at crossroads and wondering, what would Swami like me to do? How should I decide what is going to work out in my favor or not?
Okay, my advice for Sai youth is that they have to stay focused in their work in such a way that it is an offering to Swami. Then only will work to perfect level. And they have to love the subject or the career they choose and ultimately stay positive and be happy whatever happens to life and have faith in Swami and never worry about anything.
Sounds like sound advice. Very nice talking to you, Brother Rajshekhar Badam, and I should say Dr. Rajshekhar Badam, and congratulations once again.
Thank you very much, sister. I strongly feel that Swami gives a lot, not because we are worthy of it, but to make us worthy for what we had already got. So I think one day I'll become a worthy student of this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sister.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sai Ram, dear listeners. You just heard a short interview with Sai University alumnus Dr. Rajshekhar Badam, who has been awarded the PhD degree and the Outstanding Student Award recently at JAIST. JAIST is the Japan Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. We look forward to your feedback to this interview or any other Radio Sai programs. You can always reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. With that, let us now move on and remind ourselves that we need to continue to nurture the spirit of Navratri by seeking the goddess within and celebrating her glory through the thoughts we think, the words we speak, and the actions we perform. On Morning Glory today, I intend to do just that by bringing you a Radio Sai exclusive, a brand new episode of Trisware Divinity with an IAS officer, that is an Indian Administrative Service officer from Madhya Pradesh in Central India. Her name is Ms. Deepthi Gaur Mukherjee. I will let her dynamism, realism, and her faith, which is based in the teachings of her Sadhguru, speak for themselves. Here is our recent Trisware Divinity interview with Ms. Deepthi Gaur Mukherjee for your listening pleasure. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Trisware Divinity. Under the spotlight today is Mrs. Deepthi Gaur Mukherjee. Mrs. Deepthi Gaur Mukherjee is an Indian Administrative Service Officer of the 1993 batch, and she has over 20 years of work experience in various fields of both state and central government. She has handled various assignments as district collector in two districts, project director in Urban Development Department, and Joint Secretary, Department of Public Enterprises, Government of India. Currently, Mrs. Deepthi Gaur Mukherjee is the Commissioner of School Education Department in the state of Madhya Pradesh. Mrs. Deepthi Gaur Mukherjee has a stellar academic background. She has completed her master's degree in economics from the Jawaharlal Nehru University, New Delhi, followed by a master's in public management from the London School of Economics. Mrs. Mukherjee came into the fold of Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba at the age of 12. She has been associated with Seva and other activities of the Sai Society in Noida, where her parents reside. Her mother, Mrs. Savita Gaur, has been a Bal Vikas Guru. Her father, late Colonel S.K. Gaur, a retired army officer, has been an active member as well as an office bearer of the Sai Society. Both her parents have guided and involved her in various Seva activities in Noida and in Prashanthi Nilayam as per the schedule allotted to Uttar Pradesh. Srimati Mukherjee considers herself blessed and privileged to be part of the huge loving Sai family, and we at Radio Sai feel very privileged to have her with us today. Sairam Deepthi ji, and a very warm welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you, Sairam.
How nice it is to have you here today. I can't even begin to tell you. Now, you hold such an important position professionally where you can influence the lives of so many. And personally, you are a product of the Sri Satya Sai Bal Vikas program, the Education in Human Values. How has that grooming, that training made you the person you are today?
The position which I am in right now is also Swami's doing. So I would like to start by saying that whatever position one is given in one's life is because of Swami. So whatever we have been given, the basic purpose is to do that in a way which Swami wants. And I was very fortunate to have come into Swami's fold at a very young age of 12. And at that time, for me, Swami was only about bhajans, or about learning a couple of shlokas and trying to understand what was divinity about, what was God all about. It was as I was growing and as I started going to college that I actually realized what Swami was saying, his message, his various stories, whatever he said, that actually started sinking into me. Before that, it was more of I would listen, but I wouldn't hear.
So there's a very important
difference. So you would listen, but you would listen with half a ear. But I started hearing and understanding only after a certain amount of time. And I think the most important thing which I have drawn from a lot of other things also, is the belief that doing right is the only thing to do. Satya jo hai, wahi sabse mahatvapurna hai. That is the most important thing at any cost.
Sometimes the cost can be pretty high.
Yes, the cost can be pretty high, but that's where Baba's teachings count. That's where when you start reading Mahabharata, when you start reading other you know, our scriptures. Our scriptures, then you get the strength. I remember Swami had you know, Swami used to say that pleasure is an interval between two pains, and I couldn't really understand. So when I was fortunate enough to have been granted an interview, when we went in, I started complaining to him. I was that time very early into my career, and I was not yet you know, totally I won't say expert. I'm not still an expert. But I wasn't yet used to the idea of working in the government and handling different kinds of interest groups, and then still managing to keep your own, you know, the right thing to do. So the first thing I did said to him was that, Swami, bahut tension hai, bahut zyada tension hai. And he smiled so tenderly, so beautifully, and said, Ma, a life, a pleasure is an interval between two pains. And I think that really struck me. From that day onwards, I started assuming, I took it as a thing that, look, there will be struggles in life. There will be difficulties in life. A pleasure can only come in the middle. So let's accept it. So once you accept, then, you know, your reactions become very, they become very effective. Because then you stop reacting with your heart, with your emotion, you start reacting with your mind. And you start looking at things the way they should be looked at, rather than getting into a very emotional tangle about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anger, if you remember, all our scriptures say, ki jab aap bahut vichlit ho, ya jab aap bahut pareshan ho, tab koi bhi nirnay nahi lena chahiye.
Never make an important decision in a moment of anger.
Yes.
Or disturbance.
So this, I think, is very important for all of us to understand, that we should never try to make any important decision.
And you must have pressure from so many different groups, from your political bosses, special interest groups.
Yes, that's the occupational hazard which one has got in this particular service. But I have been so fortunate and so blessed by Sai that I've never really had a problem. You build a reputation. You build a certain kind of reputation only about yourself, then a lot of things get just completely filtered out before they reach you.
Mm-hmm,
because people know.
You're a no-nonsense person.
So people know that this thing, this particular proposition or this particular proposal probably will not see the, will not be listened, by me. So they don't really approach me on those matters. So in a way, I think I'm protected also by Sai and his teachings. However, it's not to say that, you know, you don't have difficult situations, but those come in everybody's life.
Of course.
Why only a career bureaucrat? It comes in anybody's life. It comes in a corporate sector. You know, you may be asked to do unethical things which you don't think are correct. You have promoters who might be getting behind you and making you do wrong things. So I think that is a struggle which everybody undergoes in every life which they've got. You know, in academics, you have different kinds of tension. So I won't say that, that is why that pleasure interval between two pains is very important. You know, everybody has struggled.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has had it easy. So once you accept that, then you stop lamenting, you stop crying, you stop reacting, and you start actually understanding situations, trying to respond to them. I think that is something which I have learned. And of course, there's a long way to go. I won't say I'm perfect at that. But as situations arise, one learns from them.
This decision to go into the Indian Administrative Services, which is supposed to be a very prestigious and hard to get into area, and yet even harder to survive in, what influenced you to take this up?
Okay, that again is Swami's, total Swami's will and Swami's command or indication, whatever you can call it. Actually, I was never interested in the civil services. I was actually interested in going abroad. Yes, I thought I'll do my economics. I'll do a GRE and go abroad. But however, I don't know how things got maneuvered around. And I did my master's then in JNU. Once I went to JNU, I met those people who were taking the civil services. So I got influenced by them. And then Swami came in my dream and indicated to me that I should take the civil services.
Mm.
But it was never, IAS or IPS. It was just that taking the civil services.
I see.
So I wouldn't say that I had, you know, focused completely on the
Indian Administrative
Service.
It's a very
service.
Tough exam to pass.
Yes, but then again, it's totally Swami's doing. There are lots of people who are very good, who are much better than us, who are gold medalists, who don't get in. It's a pure lottery or luck. People call it lottery or luck. I would call it grace. So, but Swami may have thought that I may be able to be do something in this particular line of action. So that's where I am.
And you're a commissioner of education for a very large state.
Yes.
Madhya Pradesh.
Yes. Temporarily, yes.
For now.
Yes.
And it's such an important area. We can make, you can influence policy and you can impact many lives.
True.
How does Swami guide you in this?
Here again, I mean, here the it's easiest in the sense because Swami has a huge, EHV, Education Human Values. There's a whole academia around Swami's Sai Eduke. So it helps me in lots of ways. There are things which you're bound by the constitution, by the state government laws. However, there's enough scope because what Swami is saying is nothing which is beyond the constitution, or it is not unethical or illegal or anything.
It's very secular.
It's very secular. It's extremely secular. So how do you weave in the principles, the values,
yes,
the basic human values into a curriculum? Although even that, the government of India is very, if you read the curriculum of the National Curriculum Framework, that itself says a lot. So there's not much to do in terms of writing a curriculum. It's more in terms of you implement a program. So, you know, Swami always says that well done is well said. So my idea is that whatever is what the law says, whatever there is to do about education, let's try and implement it in the true spirit. And that is a tough job, definitely. And this is a sector which doesn't show you results immediately. Health and education are two sectors where it takes time to show results. And one is trying, and that also, Swami is the inspiration. So let us see how far one is able to achieve whatever one is planning.
Now, given your background of Satyasai education and your priorities as an individual, what is the hardest thing about being an IAS officer holding this position that you hold, where you're answerable to so many different groups?
The most difficult thing I would say is that when you try, I think political pressure is not that tough to handle, you know. It's more
really?
I don't think it's that tough to handle at all. I mean, it is difficult, but it is not impossible. It's not something which will probably, although I've been very fortunate because I've been blessed by Baba. I haven't had that particular issue where I've had to take major, steps or whatever. But I think the difficulty lies is more in terms of taking the right decision.
How do you determine what you're deciding
so,
is right?
So that is important because sometimes it's not easy to take a decision. You know, there are so many groups. And to understand that which is the group which has to achieve the maximum priority or receive the appropriate priority, it becomes difficult to decipher and to come to a conclusion. And then that, I think, there are two basic things. One, what Swami always says, that look at the person who's the neediest and the most, the downtrodden. And what Gandhiji also said. Gandhiji said, whenever you take a decision, always look at whether whatever decision you're going to take is actually going to benefit the last man.
The lowest common denominator.
So is that person standing on the street, working in the fields, going to benefit by your decision? You know, that is an important talisman, so to say. You can always look at that and say, look at your decision. You learn on, it's a learning curve. Mm-hmm. So you make some mistakes. And then you learn, and then you don't make the mistakes again. Mm. So there's nothing which can be perfect. There is no perfect tense in governments.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're here as part of this huge convention for women, the Mahila, Satyasai Mahila Vibha convention that we had in Prashanthi Nilayam. And you're also holding in your professional life a very important position in a world that is fairly male predominated. Is it hard to be a woman in that position?
No, I don't think it's hard to be a woman at all. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people who disagree with me, but I think I have been very fortunate. And I also feel that it's the way you carry yourself which is important. If you carry yourself as a woman, you'll be treated like a woman. If you carry yourself as a competent professional, then you're treated as a competent professional. And I think government in that sense is much better than most working places.
Hmm.
Here you are given recognition for the work you're doing and not because you belong to a particular gender.
Hmm.
So I've been.
That's something nice to hear about the government of India.
It is definitely. I mean, it's not just the administrative service. You look at the number of police officers, police officers who are there,
or diplomats, or revenue services,
any service you find. In fact,
railway services full
everywhere.
Of women on top positions. It's Indian banking industry.
Yes, Anuti Bhattacharya. I mean, you have them everywhere.
Yes.
So I don't think in government there is discrimination of any kind. In fact, it's very very helpful for a woman to work in the government because you get an absolute level playing field and you're there on your competence. That's it.
And I'm so happy to hear that because I shared the same perspective, and not many people can realize that even in modern India, in these sectors, women do have a level playing field. They're not the victims.
Absolutely not.
Yes. And this equal opportunity is an area of weakness that many advanced countries are still working on.
Absolutely.
For example, in America, you don't find a single banker at the top who's a woman.
Right.
And so in India, by comparison, in the civil services, in the banking industry, in the corporate world, in the police forces, women are leading as equal partners.
Absolutely. Mm. And you're not given, I mean, I don't think... most women don't ask for privileges and they're not given any special privileges. In fact, toughest jobs are given to women. It's not as if you're not given tough jobs.
I guess because they're competent enough to do it.
So that's the best. I mean, so your metal is basically, I mean, you're being tested on your competency and nothing else. So that's actually very good.
Now, Swami always says that, you know, Swami encouraged education for women because he started his first campus of the Sai University with the College for Women because as an astute investor, Swami recognize that educating a woman means educating a whole, as they said, a generation. Now, yet Swami also places a lot of emphasis on family values, duty to family. How do you balance both? How do you prioritize? Because your job is very demanding, obviously, because you're at a very high position and yet you're also a person with a family and other responsibilities.
Well, I think this is a challenge which actually every working woman has to face, irrespective of her position. And in fact, I think that we are actually in a privileged position. It's actually the women who are working maybe at the lower echelons or maybe who are working in the unorganized sector who have a much bigger challenge.
And very difficult.
It's so difficult for them. It is so very difficult.
Minimum wage and no benefits.
No benefits. And plus, you're living a life of drudgery, literally.
And total illiteracy. Awareness is very poor.
Yes. So for them, it's much more difficult. We are, in fact, very fortunate and blessed, I mean, in that sense, to have a lot of facilities or even material comforts, which, you know, which women at the lower positions don't get. But I think irrespective of whether, I mean, there are two different ways of handling a situation. As far as we are concerned, people who are in government service are concerned, I think it is not difficult to balance. However, there is no universal prescription you can follow. It depends on the position in which you are. If you're in a position which is in the field, where you're working and you're answerable to people directly, there I think the family does not take a priority. It should not take priority because there are thousands of people who are depending upon you. You know, if you're supposed to be meeting people in a public platform, listening to their grievances, then you can't say this is my lunchtime or my child is requires me and I have to go or I have to go back. At that time, the person who's come 100 miles just to have his application marked or just to get his grievance addressed, you can't disappoint him or her. So I think when you're in a field position, the family has to take a slight back seat. However, being a woman, the better part of it is that you don't waste your time doing unnecessary and your social engagements are fairly limited because of your own choice. So you get that time, you know.
So effective time management.
So effective time management and you get quality time with your children. And that is more important. Is this no point hanging around all the time and, you know, trying to get after your child and making him or her do all sorts of things? It's better to get quality time. Although, you know, my children may have a totally different take on this. But if you manage your social commitments well and don't do unnecessary socialization or things which people do just to be networking, so to say. If you cut down your networking, which is not so important.
You think so?
Oh, yes.
A lot of people swear by networking.
I think men count
through.
More on networking. Mm-hmm. I mean, that happens in the corporate sector also. In fact, there are lots of nice stories which go around networking and how people, ladies are made to feel as if they're not working because men work till 7:38 while women finish their work by 6 and they're off. So it's also to do with how you manage your social commitments and what the unnecessary commitments which you can cut down on and instead focus on the family. Mm-hmm.
I see. So prioritizing and time management. Yeah. What would be your message to younger women, younger Sai women who have aspirations for professional success and also want to fulfill Swami's dictum to, you know, family first? So what would be your advice to them?
My young Sai sisters or young daughters, I would just like to say two or three things. The first is that to choose a profession which really excites them. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you work at something, when you choose something which is your passion or which is your aptitude, then it doesn't become a drudgery. It is something which you can do faster and more effectively.
And with joy.
With joy.
Yeah.
So that gives you that much more time and that much more energy to give your family.
Hmm.
And the other thing is that there is no, one thing which is the priority all the time. Your priorities keep shifting. As you're young, you have lots of time, lots of energy. Give it to your work. Give it all you've got. When you reach, say, about the late 20s or the early 30s, that's the time from the family. That's when you should probably slow down a little bit on your work. And
at what age did you join the civil service?
I joined at 24.
Oh, very young, okay.
That's not very young, that's average.
Uh-huh.
But what I would try to tell everybody is that nobody in this world is indispensable. Nobody.
That's very true. We
nobody.
Take ourselves so seriously.
Yes. And that also happens because we don't have that spirit of surrender. We keep thinking that we are the doers and we are the doers. Right? So then as soon as we realize that whatever we are doing is what God's will for us, is I'm not the doer, things will resolve. So even if you're not there, things won't fall apart. In fact, if what you're doing is good and meaningful and God is meaning for you to do it, it'll go on despite you. And once you come back, you can always go back and, you know, support it again. So I think it's important to understand that it's not very easy. Because, you know, you always think, oh, I've done such a great job. I started this new project and this new scheme. I have to take it through. It's important to take it through. At the same time, there should be a level of detachment. You know?
Very important lesson, I think.
Because, I mean, it is important to be detached, but yet be involved. So you don't have to be entangled.
Yes.
You have to be
involved. That's the key, I think.
Yes.
Give it your all without getting tangled in it.
Yes. I mean, that is the essence of Gita, but it is so difficult to follow. And I think if science is, if the women get together and actually talk to themselves, talk to each other.
So support each other.
Support each other. It is so important. You know, there are different ways of tackling a situation which you may think that, you know, you've reached your teeth's end and you can't do anything. But then you find another person handling it in a totally different way. So you actually learn from each other. So we have to derive strength from each other and not really look at, you know, pulling down each other. That's important. That's very, very important.
That's easy to do amongst women?
I don't think it's tough. It depends how you go about doing it. It should be equally tough for men too, because they're supposed to be more ambitious than women. But it's just that, you know, we somehow have to, we have this label on women that women tend to be more bad bosses for women. That's more of it's a mistaken notion. But I think girls are very smart. I mean, they're growing up, they're intelligent, and if they're emotionally intelligent, I think they can learn a lot of, they can derive a lot of strength from each other. After all, you know, your best friends are your girlfriends.
Hmm.
And how come when you're at your professional work, you can't take your strength from your women friends?
Hmm.
It's important. And ladies in positions of power should nurture and mentor younger.
That's a very nice thought. Exactly.
It's very important to do that. Because, you know, you've gone through that.
You've been
through
that.
You handle those problems.
Mm, yeah. And they can learn from your
they
experience.
They can learn. You can tell them. Whether they accept it or not is up to them.
Mm.
You should at least offer. That's very important.
Mm. How important is financial independence in a woman's life, in your opinion?
Oh, I think it's very important. It is very important because it gives you the control over your life. You know? And
can it also be a bane at times?
It depends. If you're the sole breadwinner for your family, it could be the bane, because then you really have no choice, and you are forced to take decisions or forced to do things which there is no alternative, because, you know, you are the sole bread winner for your family. But where there's a double the double earners, it gives a lot of independence. Let's not look at the middle class or the people who are in, you know, white collar jobs. Let's look at the women who are laborers.
Hmm.
Who work in the informal sector, who work for daily wages. Initially it's a little bit of drudgery for them, but have you ever noticed the lady who comes to work in your house? She is very independent. She's absolutely very independent. You see the confidence on her face when she comes to your house. The way she juggles around 4 or 5 houses, the way she juggles her child's education, the way she decides, I have to send some money back home, or now I have to buy a fridge. See, these are important decisions for independence of the woman. She's actually taking decisions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they always have a choice. It's not easy,
mm-hmm,
but I think it's important. Yes. At least you're not dependent on someone coming and, I mean, you're not at somebody's mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Lord forbid, if something happens and your families break up, then it's very important.
Because survival depends on it.
So then you can stand on your own feet, mm-hmm, and look after yourself.
Mm-hmm. as a very self-aware woman who has obviously a strong spiritual grounding, how do you value or rate emotional independence amongst women?
Oh, I think this again is at the crux of of who you are, and there I think your emotional independence comes from your spiritual development, and it is something which you have to realize over a period of time, where it's good to have a family. It's very important to have a family and have those family ties. At the same time, not to be emotionally entangled. Again, you have to have that kind of, sanity around you, that, okay, they're important, everything's important, but, you know, me, my spirit, my soul, or who am I, is also equally important. You know, after all, we all came into this world alone, and we will all go away. You know, nobody's going to accompany me. And of course, it's not easy, it's not going to be easy at all. For some people, it comes early, the awareness. For some people, it comes later with a lot of pain. For some people, it just happens, and that also is because of your previous karma. But pahunchna to wahin par hai. We have to reach that thing. So you can be compassionate. You can have a lot of empathy. But you don't have to be emotionally entangled. You should not be so involved with anything or anybody that it destroys your personality. It destroys your confidence. That, I think, is an important balance to maintain. You like people. You like your family. Everybody is important to you, but it shouldn't destroy you. It shouldn't destroy your essence, because that is something which is beyond body and beyond emotional attachments. And that is the message of Gita.
And that's very sage advice for women, especially who tend to be emotional beings and lose themselves in a cause they believe in, whether it's their family or their children's future, till they're hit with the wall of bricks. Because in the form of disappointment, because they haven't prepared themselves for me time or valued themselves as divine beings.
Yes. Mm. You know, once you have opened your antenna and you're receiving a different signal, then of course, along with the usual signals which you receive, you also receive the divine signal. And that by itself is so fulfilling. I've started on this path and I'm not even 1 millimeter, on that road. But it gives you a lot of strength. I wouldn't say that, you become superhuman and supergirl and you can handle any kind of emotional turbulence very easily. No, it's not going to do that. Because nobody can handle that so easily. But yes, you may slow down. Your back may bend for a bit of time, but your back won't break.
Speaking of which, if you have a moment where you feel completely crushed because, there's a major disappointment or a setback you have suffered, how do you get yourself together again?
There also, I think Swami really helps, is that I just try to leave it aside for the moment.
Are you able to get your mind off of it?
It's not easy, but it's a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work in progress. And it helps that I have an extremely spiritual mother, who is my friend, philosopher, guide. And whenever I am perturbed, whenever I have duvidha mein hoon main, ya mujhe lagta hai ki mere ko samajh mein nahi aa raha kya karun, to meri maa jo hai, she's so calm and she's so peaceful and she's highly spiritually evolved. I mean, I just look at her and I ask her for advice, she gives me advice, then I take my decision and then I'm at peace.
Mm-hmm.
So once you take a decision, you are at peace. It is the decision making time where you are struggling between different alternatives, which is the struggle. If you remember Gita, जब तक अर्जुन ने जंग जब तक उसने उन्होंने लड़ाई शुरू नहीं की तब तक वो बहुत टर्बुलेंस में थे ना, क्योंकि दिमाग में उथल पुथल, एक बार निर्णय ले लिया, एक बार समझ गए,
हाँ.
तो फिर उन्होंने कर लिया. तो वो जो डिसीजन मेकिंग वाला जो पीरियड होता है, दैट इज वेयर द कंफ्यूजन हैपेंस. एंड देयर इफ यू हैव स्वामी, इफ यू हैव बिलीव इन गॉड, सो यू मे गो अप एंड डाउन द वेव्स, बट यू फाइनली कम अप. इट वोंट सबमर्ज, इट वोंट ड्राउन यू. सो यू कीप गोइंग अप एंड डाउन, बट यू विल कम अप.
Dipti ji, you wear your faith on your sleeve. You're very open about your love for Swami and his teachings. Does that get you any kind of a reaction at work?
No, that's because I don't go around trying to convert people or trying
of course
to
not.
This thing. I mean, I try that whatever Swami has taught us or whatever messages, whatever his teachings are, I try to show them through my work. and through my actions.
Very effective.
Rather than through my words. Mm. So there's no point in preaching. There's no point in extolling Swami's virtues. Swami is competent. He doesn't need me to recruit people. Right?
So he doesn't need any of us. We are all highly dispensable.
Absolutely. So when he wants someone to come into his fold, he or she will come into his fold. I can only serve to show people that if you're a Sai devotee, this is how one behaves. And yes, if you think you like the trailer, please go and watch the movie.
Rest of the movie as well.
Yes.
Hmm. Have you ever had a moment of difficulty when someone tried to, because we hear these stories that, you know, the civil service, there are so many pitfalls that one can face in, for example, somebody trying to bribe you. Has that ever happened to you, that you were put under any kind of influence to skew your decision a certain way?
Well, that happens all the time.
How do you deal with it?
But yes, it happens most of the time. A simple no. No, no.
Okay.
That really helps. The sooner it's said, and make it simple without trying to be sweet-coated, it actually helps a lot. A simple no helps. There's no point in sweet-coating it and trying to, beating around the bush.
Hmm.
And actually, in fact, the other person actually then feels really foolish and sheepish. Like I said, a lot of things don't come to you because, you have built a reputation and people don't come to you with those kind of proposals. But if and when, if they ever come, a simple no works beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes truth is very simple to hand.
Yeah, it is quite simple.
We just think we complicate it in our head.
Right. And the thing is, if you're not attached to positions, if you're not attached to a particular posting, then you have nothing to lose. That's why government
except
is actually...
Except a very quick transfer.
That's okay. that's perfectly fine. That is something which you came into the service opening your eyes to it. It's an occupational feature.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think it is more difficult for people in the private sector. Where you are at the mercy of the promoter or the guy who's hiring you. In the government, if you think that you are under pressure, nobody can hold your hand and make you sign. You have to sign yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you can always say no and just walk out. And there'll be somebody else, of course, somebody else will come into the job, mm-hmm. whoever somebody wanted. But that's fine. You don't have to be attached to the job. Ye nahi koi aur se.
Now, Deepthiji, you're in the thick of policy. You watch, you're a witness to policy making, policy implementation in this country. And Swami has assured us that, golden age is only around the corner. And then we read media headlines and we are bombarded with negative news of everything almost crashing, So how do you see that pronouncement of Swami that, no, India is going to regain her former glory. It is going to be the leader of the world.
Oh, well, I hope it happens very soon. I hope that corner is right round the corner.
Yes, amen to that. All of us are keeping our fingers crossed.
Yes. No, so we're all soldiers in the army. And there are bad things happening, but there are also good things happening. And, we probably need a little more balanced media where you also highlight the good things which are happening. Of course, there are media houses and papers which highlight the good things which are happening. After all, the IT revolution, it's a good thing which happened, which took us years ahead. And there are some very bad things which are happening, which also should be highlighted.
Of course.
Because there's no point putting things under the carpet. So it's good that things are being discussed and people are debating, but there should be debate. There should be discourse. There should be actual discussions. And then let's take a decision on whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing to do. After all, Mahabharat ke samay bhi the sthiti bahut kharab thi. So sthitiyan to kharab rahengi. But
history is replete with such situations.
So it is, it's bound to be, it's just that what things are tolerable, what are non-negotiable and what are negotiable. What are things which you can survive with and what are things which you cannot survive with. It's those things. And it's those basic, foundations of society which we really have to be looking at.
Mm. Women's rights and safety
women's
is a big
safety,
issue.
Women's safety, women's rights, children's rights.
Yeah.
The way we are, the crime against women, children, it has reached, it's very alarming. Very, very alarming. Ho sakta hai pehle bhi hota hoga aur hum logo pata nahi tha kyunki akhbaron mein nahi aata tha.
Yeah, perhaps now that it has got the media exposure, we are becoming
more aware. So in a way it is good. So these people are becoming aware. You're putting in the corrective measures to prevent those things happening. Mm-hmm. Hum jab padhte hain, you read about child abuse. So most of the child abuse happens to people who are within the family.
Mm-hmm.
known to the child. ये हमारी सोसाइटी का एक खराब चीज है और इसको हम लोग समझते अगर ये वी थिंक दैट दिस इज समथिंग विच डजंट हैपन इन यू नो आवर सोसाइटी देन देयर इज नो पॉइंट
वी कांट विश इट अवे वी हैव टू हैंडल इट एंड डील विद इट
सो इट्स बेटर टू ओपन योर आईज सी व्हाट्स गोइंग रॉन्ग एंड करेक्ट इट रादर देन बिहेविंग लाइक एन ऑस्ट्रिच एंड थिंकिंग दैट थिंग्स विल जस्ट सॉर्ट देम आउट बाय देमसेल्व्स दैट्स नॉट गोइंग टू हैपन
You know, yesterday's conference, the Mahila conference, and we had such eminent speakers like yourself and some others. We heard wonderful voices of women from the ground who, somebody was saying this was the real Sai Women's Convention because these are women who are on the ground doing the work. Yet we don't hear many women's voices in positions of leadership or decision making within the Sai organization. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the All India President has something to say about that today. And maybe I'm not the right person to talk about women in the Sai organization because I am only a... I'm not a part of the organization to say. I'm more a part of his loyal army. But I think there are two ways of looking about it. If you ask me as a dispassionate observer and who is a devotee of Sai... there is nothing which prevents a lady from, or a woman, from associating herself with the work of Sai. Right? There are so many avenues for you to do that. If you talk about positions of power, or positions of decision making. I think that, having just a label of, the president of the district, or the president of the state, of the, all of the, doesn't really matter. I mean, if you're working for Swami and Swami's mission, then how does a particular title. Label, how does a label matter? As long as you're contributing and you're taking decisions, and I feel, I mean, it happens in any organization, if what you're saying is sensible, if what you're saying is workable, if what you're saying appeals to everybody and doesn't look at one particular group, then your decision is taken. It's a consensual decision. It's not something which, you know, dictatorship or anything of that kind. So, well, yes, there should be more women voices in decision making. All the same, labeling it is not going to help. You know, it's like when you have Panchayati Raj and when you had, there are voices asking for reservation of women in political parties and all that. It's very good. It's an affirmative action. But alone it's not going to help, no? I mean, the point is that the persons who are going to reach there also should be the right representative of women's issues and women's voices. So as long as, and I think in Swami's organization, what I see and what I've seen all this while, it's not as if what women are saying or what decisions which women are taking are going to be, are not taken into consideration. In fact, I think they're given equal importance while they're taking action.
Wonderful. Very nice to talk to you and hear your perspectives. It's nice for us to hear from a person who's out there in the field and sees both sides of the situation from a government perspective as well as Swami's perspective, the Sai organization's perspective. Do you think the twain will meet at some point in time? It's because Swami said that politics without principle and human value is not only useless, worthless, it's dangerous. Education without character, commerce without principles and so on. He also said that there is room for these human values to be a part of all aspects of life, including public life.
Oh, yes. I think how can you separate human values from existence? It's because human values are missing or that they are not in complete in harmony that we're having the conflict which we're having today. The very fact that we're sitting and discussing human values and what is the right thing, what is the wrong thing means it's all pervasive. So hopefully... with this churning happening, with discussions happening, with discourse happening, we will have the importance given to human values, the basic human values, as time goes by. Because as we also see, the last 15-20 years, a lot of change has happened with education coming in, with people being exposed to different cultures, different ways of thinking. You find that it becomes easier for them to absorb different. Ways of thinking or different streams of thought.
And I think the mobile phone revolution has helped rural India to come to grips with, this infinite bank of information on the internet, which anybody who can use a mobile can all with this basic data package can actually access.
Yes. But along with that, they also should have the
discrimination.
But that happens for everybody. Why just the rural areas?
It happens for you, me, anybody. Discrimination is required for everybody.
Our younger generation also should have the discrimination to see what is good and what is bad.
And you know, they talk of the V-chip to block what is not necessary. The V-chip should be within our hearts and our heads, actually.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. But then again, that's a work in progress.
Well, Dipti Gaur Mukherjee, it has been my honor to sit across from you and hear your thoughts and your points of view. I'm sure our listeners are going to absolutely love it.
The pleasure and the privilege was totally mine. I feel very, very privileged and honored to have had this opportunity to come to Radio Sai and to express my views in Swami's studio.
Where he sat physically,
being questioned by Sai devotees such as you, it gives me immense pleasure and so much of.
It's an honor and
it's my pleasure. It's my complete pleasure and privilege.
And Sai, I really appreciate your candor and your honesty and your humility with which you speak. I got so many lessons personally, and I'm sure our listeners will too. Thank you, Dipti.
Thank you, Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. It's great to have you with us on Radio Sai. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the seat of supreme truth, absolute auspiciousness, and ultimate beauty. Dear listeners, you just heard Tryst with Divinity, an interview with Ms. Dipti Gaur Mukherjee, an IAS officer from Madhya Pradesh. I hope you appreciated her pragmatism steeped in the universal teachings of Bhagwan Baba as much as I did. We would love to hear back from you. At Radio Sai, we welcome your thoughts, comments and suggestions regarding this interview with Dipti Gaur Mukherjee as well as the earlier one with Dr. Rajashekhar Badam from Japan. You can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. With that, I'm super pleased to announce the names of all those who responded correctly to my question this morning, namely, when did Bhagwan Baba start the Grama Seva tradition during Navratri? So I was looking for a year from you. And funny enough, I already gave you the answer in the beginning because I said that Grama Seva was in the 16th year of its tradition. And only one person picked on it. I think Rekha Loknath wrote to me that, you know, you yourself gave the answer. But compared to the feedback that I normally get, it looks like this was a tough question for many because I did not have the usual 38, 40 responses which we typically get on Morning Glory. However, many of you got the answer right, and I'm very pleased to read their names. Amongst the correct answer, of course, the answer was the year 2000, because 16 years ago, that's why it's the 16th year of Gram Seva this year. Swami formalized this tradition of students learning how to package, sort, and do all the things related to getting this on trucks, and then, you know, those 50-odd trucks going into villages and serving those 300,000 people across over the 9-day period. So that began in the year 2000, and the following listeners got all the answers right, this answer right. Amongst them, Dr. Jitendra Mulki of Dahanu Road, Maharashtra, Arya Mishra of Bangalore, Karnataka, Brother Sridhar Palakur from Irvine, California, USA, Brother Ajay Rajan from Chennai, Tamil Nadu, Brother Sai Krishna from Hyderabad, Telangana, India, Mrudula Murthy from Bangalore, Karnataka, the mother and son team of Sai students from Mumbai, Sai Sudha Sasi Kumar and Sai Mohan Sasi Kumar. Congratulations to both of you. Rekha Loknath from Mysore, who was paying close attention to what I was saying. So thank God somebody was listening, at least one listener. They knew the answer was already there. Congratulations, Rekha. Tarun Kanti Ghosh from Kolkata, West Bengal, Veda Patel from Johannesburg, South Africa, and Meenakshi Velmurugan from New Delhi. Congratulations to all the 12 participants who got the answers right and on to this morning's quiz. Now I want to leave you with a lovely Radio Sai special about Seva and some music to follow that, and I wish you a really Saisome awesome day ahead. Till we meet next Thursday, I urge you to be well and do whatever it takes to be in a positive space and be happy, because happiness is union with God. And might I remind all our listeners that next Thursday at this time, we would have just concluded, actually by 9:30, a large number of Swami's daughters from all over the world are converging in Prashanthi Nilayam to celebrate the Avatar Declaration Day. Next Thursday is October the 20th. It was on October 20th, 1940 that Bhagwan declared that, you know, he had a mission to follow. He was a young man, all of 14 years old, and he said, my devotees are waiting. So a lot of the women alumni of the Satya Sai University and the Satya Sai schools here in Prashanthi Nilayam are going to come together and celebrate on the 20th of October. And I hope I can find someone to join me in the studio and talk about it. We'll have a live conversation with one of the guests who are joining, the alumni of the women alumnus of Swami's University. And I'm also planning a very special series that will take care of your holistic health, and I will feature it right here on Morning Glory. So continue to join me every Thursday morning at 9:40. With that, Jai Sai Ram, and enjoy this audio special, please.
Prema Swarupulara, ee vidyarthulu, yuvakulu, village sevalakai potunnaru. Grama sevayanna, Rama sevaye suma. పల్లె పల్లెలు పోండి, వీధి వీధి వాళ్ళని కూడా సాధించండి. ఆకలితో బాధపడేటువంటి వారికి ఇంత పట్టిన అన్నం పెట్టండి. ఈనాడు లోకం లోపల కష్టాలు నష్టాలు దుఃఖాలు పడేటువంటి వారి బాధలంతా నివారణ గావించి ఆ సేవా యొక్క అనుగ్రహాన్ని వారు అందిస్తారని నేను ఆశిస్తున్నాను. ది బెస్ట్ వే టు లవ్ గాడ్ ఈజ్ టు లవ్ ఆల్ సర్వ్ ఆల్.
प्रसन्न होगा मेरा साई प्रसन्न होगा मेरा साई प्रसन्न
స్వరూపులారా, సాయిని సంతోషపెట్టేటువంటిది సేవలే, సాయి చేసేటువంటిది కూడాను సేవలే, సాయి చెప్పేటువంటిది కూడాను సేవలే. ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఉత్తమ భావములతో విశాలమైన హృదయములతో సమాజంలో ప్రవేశించి సేవలు సలపండి. అదే సాయికి సంతృప్తికరం ఇచ్చేటువంటిది.
प्रसन्न होगा दिन दुखियों से प्रेम करो मेरा साई प्रसन्न होगा साई में ये प्रेम की सहारा मेरा साई प्रसन्न होगा मेरा साई प्रसन्न होगा
The Lord was once asked, "What relationship must ours be best described as?" "That of a master and disciple," replied the Lord. "For there is no reason or season for the bond that exists. Guru is the dispeller of darkness, the light whose radiance we seek to enlighten the path. The Guru shines forth selflessly so that we may walk the path boldly, so as to not stumble over the peaks and slip at the troughs. Then there comes a time when the disciple turns to the Guru and seeks the Guru himself. The seeking has to be earnest, the restlessness of yearning irrepressible. It is only then that the effulgence of His grace turns to reveal His own truth, the truth that the Guru without was a mere reflection of the Guru within, the truth that Guru is Hari and Hari alone is the Guru.
Hari
Oh, एकोंकार सतनाम करता पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूर्त अजूनी सेवन गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच
मेरी